Waiting on the recorder. There we go. Good afternoon, and welcome to week six in our march through Koheles, slog through Koheles, whatever you want to call it. God willing, today we will wrap up the introduction. I thought that last time, but we made enough progress that I do think it's realistic this time. Again, we've been talking about how Chazal, how our sages dealt with the challenges of contradictions between what Koheles puts forward and philosophy seen elsewhere in Tanakh, as well as the apparent internal contradictions that are found in Koheles. So again, we had said a couple of weeks ago that one approach is to say, since the book has Torah in it, we judge the rest of the book favorably, and we gave different approaches for that, such as analyzing the statements to read them on a deeper level, explaining passages in ways that don't fit the context but fit the overall integrated faithful message, and another method of suggesting that there are different voices at different points within the book expressing views which are not all accepted in the end. So that was the first approach. The second approach that we brought was to say, don't rewrite the human voice that's in the book. Rather, the internal and external contradictions are the point. The limited nature of the human voice is the point. And what this says is that Koheles is the voice of a limited, confused human being, who is angered and frustrated and shocked and confused by the world. And the message is, number one, that this human perspective belongs in Tanakh as well. And number two, that we should deal with a world that is so confusing and so upsetting by finding a practical path forward despite that confusion. And this was basically Rabbi Angel's perspective. And then I started on a third approach, which you could really call 2B. In some senses, it's similar to Rabbi Angel's approach in that it acknowledges the human voice within the book and does not seek to harmonize everything. But it goes in a little bit of a different direction. And the way we started it last time was to say that there's a classic debate in Judaism as to whether Hashem created the universe just for the sake of human beings. Everybody agrees within Judaism that human beings are vital for the world, but that isn't the same thing as saying that the world was created exclusively for us. And we showed one view that says, yes, the world was created exclusively for the sake of human beings who would accept the Torah and would have this relationship with God. And the other intelligent life, meaning malachim as far as we are aware of, exist in order to play a subsidiary role to human beings. And then to go further, in the event that you were to find other beings on other planets, they would presumably also have a role in that regard. And that's all one school of thought. The other school of thought says, no, yes, human beings are very, very important. However, we are not the sole purpose of existence. And we associated that view with the perspective of the Rambam. Our plane of existence, our activities are only a part of a greater world. Right? That was all review. Is that clear? We're good? Okay, so Koheles, and this is what I tried to rush through at the end last time before realizing rushing through it was not a good idea. Koheles describes a world in which the human being is very palpably not the center of everything. First of all, because if we are the point of the universe is in trouble. Take a look, please, in your Koheles. Chapter 1, sentence 4. You're looking at the source sheet and thinking, he's slipping. It doesn't even fill two sides. But we have a lot to cover. There are a lot of text references because we're going to need to go through quite a bit of Koheles in order to get where we're going. So chapter 1, sentence 4 tells us, generation comes, generation goes, the earth remains. In other words, if we are the point of the universe, it's kind of funny because one generation goes, one generation comes. We are not long lasting on the scale of things in the universe. That's number one. And number two, the same thing is true for that which we create. If you jump to chapter 2, sentence 18, he says, I hate all of the amal. We're not going to talk about what amal is today. We won't get there. But I hate all of the amal that I performed under the sun in this realm. I'm going to leave it to whoever's after me. Who knows whether this person will be chacham o sachal, wise or foolish. And he is going to control all the stuff that I struggled for. Ah, that's hevel too. We will come back to what hevel is today. And the message here is, you work and you work and you build, and then somebody else is going to do whatever they're going to do with it, good or bad. And it continues in the ensuing verses, sentence 21, most explicitly. You have somebody who works with wisdom and with intellect and with talent, and then he gives it to some guy after him, and who knows what the person after him is going to be like. So it's not just that human beings are ephemeral, but the structures that we create are ephemeral. And then he says it's not just the temporary character of the human being, it's also the corrupt character of the human being. If you take a look at chapter 3, sentence 16, we're just going down the list of bullet points I gave you in source number 1. Chapter 3, sentence 16, he says, you know, another thing that I've observed about this world, Mekom ha-mishpat shama ha-resha, u-mekom ha-tzedek shama ha-rasha, the place of justice, there's wickedness there. Good morning. The place of righteousness, there is the wicked person. Human society and its government are often corrupt. Jump to chapter 4, sentence 13. He says, sometimes it's not about being corrupt. Sometimes it's about being incompetent. He says, better a youth who is poor and wise than a king who is elderly and foolish. So sometimes it's about corruption, but sometimes it's just about foolishness and ineptitude. We've got incompetence also. Take a look at chapter 10, sentence 16. He says, Ilach eretz shemalkech na'ar. Woe is to you, O land, whose king is a youth, v'sarayech baboker yochelu, and whose officers, whose nobles, eat in the morning. There's an element of self-indulgence that he's describing there. So that exists as well. And then, of course, the famous line, chapter 7, sentence 20, which we talked about last time, in which he says, Ki adam in tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov v'lo yecheta. There is nobody who does only good and never sins. Everybody at some point is going to do something wrong. And here I point you to, I tried to show this very quickly last time, Malachim Aleph, chapter 8, sentence 46, when Shlomo HaMelech dedicates the Beis HaMikdash and he recites his prayer of dedication, he talks about it, about the temple, about the Beis HaMikdash, among other things, as a site where people can approach God for forgiveness. And he says, Ki yechet ulach, when people sin against you, God. Ki ein adam asher lo yecheta. There is no one who doesn't sin. Same idea, almost same words as Adam in Tzadik Ba'aretz Asher Yaseh Tov V'lo Yecheta. It's another parallel, and here it's between Shlomo's work in Melachim and Shlomo's work in Kohelas. So that's a side note. My point is, as I said, if human beings are the point of the universe is in trouble. On an individual human level, Gita smiles every time I say that. I almost say it just to see her smile. The the idea here that human beings are here and gone. That which they build, here and gone. The society is often corrupt, led by people who are inept, led by people who are self-indulgent, and everybody sins. So, number one, we better hope the world is not all about human beings. And number two, the world seems not to be optimized for our satisfaction. If you take a look in chapter 2, sentences 4 to 10, he says, you know, I built houses, I planted vineyards, I made gardens and orchards, I planted all sorts of fruit trees, I made pools of water, I got servants, I had a big household, I had livestock, I had more than anybody before me over Yerushalayim, and I had silver and gold, and I had the wealth of nations, and I had sharim v'sharot. There's a lot of discussion about what sharim and sharot are. I'll take it as singers for now. I'm not going to spend time on it right now. And all the pleasures of human beings, shida v'shidot, is another one that requires explanation at some point. But he says in sentence 9, I increased and I added more than anyone who preceded me in Yerushalayim. I did everything, and everything I sought, everything that my eyes wanted, I didn't withhold. I didn't keep myself from any joy. Everything. And he says, after all that, in sentence 11, and you know what? I looked at all the stuff, and I looked at all the work, and the whole thing is hevel ureus ruach. There's nothing here that's going to make anybody happy. There's no benefit. I did all this stuff, and it did not bring satisfaction. And lest you say that's all because it was stuff, amassing wisdom and building things, jump to chapter 9, sentence 6. He says, give me a second to flip the pages. He says, love, enmity, jealousy, it's all lost, and there's nothing left under the sun. And he says in sentence 9, see life with the spouse you love all your days of hevel. Because that's all you get out of all of your life and all of the struggle that you perform under the sun. But human emotional states, love, joy, pleasure, they don't bring enduring satisfaction. At the end of the day, it's still all hevel. So this is a world in which the human being and human experience really are not, they can't be, the point of everything. And third, God doesn't seem to think that we need to understand the world, or to think that the universe cares about what we do. And this is where the internal contradictions in the book come into play. If you take a look at chapter 7, sentence 23, right? It's contradictory. The book has internal contradictions because we just don't understand what it is that we're seeing. And he says it explicitly in chapter 7, sentence 23, when he says, I tried all of this with wisdom. I said I would be wise. Amarti ech kama, v'hi rechokam imeni, and it's just beyond me. The universe God created is not comprehensible to human beings. As much as we think we understand, we don't understand it at all. And this is also where you get the contradictions to the religious ideas found elsewhere in Tanakh. So if you go back a few sentences to sentence 15, he says, Es hakol ra'isi b'imei hevli. I saw all of this in my life, that is, hevel. And again, we haven't translated hevel, but I'm taking it as ephemeral and useless for now. Yesh tzadik oved b'tzidko, v'yesh rasha ma'arich b'raso. There are tzaddikim, righteous people, who are lost or destroyed in their righteousness. There are wicked people who go on at length in their wickedness. Good deeds don't necessarily bring you good things. Bad deeds don't necessarily bring you bad things. And if it's not because God is incapable of doing otherwise, then it must mean that God has some other kind of a plan, which isn't necessarily about the individual righteous person and what they deserve, or the individual wicked person and what they deserve. It's going on for some other reason. And so you get one more verse, chapter 5, sentence 1, in which he says, Al tvahel al picha v'libcha al yamaher lo tzi davar lifnei ha'elokim. He says, don't be hasty with your mouth. Don't rush with your heart to speak things before God. Ki ha'elokim b'shamayim ve'ata al ha'aretz. God is in heaven and you ain't. Al kein yiyu dvarecha me'atim. So maybe keep your words brief. Right? A piece of advice he did not take for himself in Koheles. But don't talk so much to God, he says. So what you're seeing is that Shlomo is telling us in this book that the world doesn't revolve around human beings. It's not designed to revolve around human beings. We're not the center of everything, and we don't understand the things that we see. And this is the big difference to me between Mishle and the first, 40 chapters or so of the book of Iyov. Mishle has this very sunny narrative in which good actions are reciprocated. You do good, you get good. Bad actions are reciprocated. You do bad things, oh, are you going to suffer for it? And Koheles says, actually, the world doesn't care about your good actions or your bad actions. The world isn't going to respond anyway. Not that God won't respond ever, but in this world, you aren't going to see anything that's going to make sense to you. Iyov had the visitors offer narratives for how the world works, right? Eliphaz, Bildad, Zophar, each of them tells Iyov their explanation for why people do well, why people don't do well. And Koheles says your narratives are silly. The world doesn't make sense to human beings. Koheles is very in line, I think I said this at one point, with the conclusion of Iyov, which is you just can't understand. It's just not in line with the visitors. In fact, you could argue that Koheles is actually a war on Shlomo's other book, Shir HaShirim. Right? Because Shir HaShirim, we spent time on that in the beginning of the year. It feels like a long time ago. But the Shir HaShirim presented the relationship of us with God as God's focus in this world. Right? It's this big love story. And Koheles says, no, you're not the main player here. This is not about you. So what Koheles is doing is saying to you, you live in a world which isn't understandable to you, it's not comprehensible to you, which doesn't seem to really be about you. And the question is, how do you live in such a world? And so Koheles shows you, number one, you're going to be really confused. This is your voice. You're going to go around and around, and you're going to think this thing one day, and you think that thing another day, and you're going to be confused. Number two, the contradictions of Jewish philosophy in the book show you that, yes, it's going to look like this world isn't about you. The reward and the punishment do not seem to correspond. So what you do is recognize and name the problems, as he does in the book. Call it out for what it is. I don't understand X. I am frustrated by Y. And live a virtuous life. Because the world doesn't have to be about you. That's the statement. Sof davar hakol nishma, at the end, after everything has been heard, es elokim yirav es mitzvosav shemor. At the end of the day, your mission is still going to be to revere God. Your mission is still going to be to fulfill mitzvot. Your mission is still going to be to live a good life. Not understanding a thing about why and what and how. That to me is what's going on here, and why it's included in Tanakh, despite these contradictions and problems. I think it's because of the contradictions and problems. That's where I would go with it. Mush.
You know, I read something fascinating this weekend, and I don't know that I understand it completely, but it's really fascinating, and it really turns what you just said upside down. Because all these people who you're talking about, they're not trying
which people?
To think...
Wait, which people?
Well, you meant Shlomo HaMelech. I'm not trying to make it shorter. I'm not trying to make it shorter. Okay? But everybody who we read in Tanakh, and the ones who you mentioned are good examples, they're not trying to find out what's going on from their point of view. They're trying to figure out God's point of view. And that's the problem. Because that's what we don't do. The entire Torah is based on God's point of view with what happens. What except... Okay, there we go.
All right, yes, Gita. You're muted. Gita, you have to unmute.
Most guidebooks to life, whether it's a travel thing or a philosophy, whatever, is trying to tell people what to do. He seems to be making a vacuum out of that. Like he seems to do the opposite. He's always telling us what isn't working.
Well, except that he invalidates the thing and its opposite, right? In other words, he talks about how wisdom is bad for you and makes you angry, and then he talks about how foolishness is bad for you and makes you angry. He doesn't leave you with alternatives that are good.
Yeah, well, that's hardly a guide. I mean, his point, one can write a book because he's got this dream in his head and he wants to get them out, but it's certainly in terms of leading ideas or helping people or anything like that, which yeah. We feel that a lot of our literature, or a lot of our texts are about, he doesn't do that. He seems to, it's like a game with him to confuse us more than...
I think he's trying to be us. He's trying to express the confusion that we have, and by expressing it, he's saying, yes, this is the human experience. You don't understand what you're seeing. You don't find satisfaction. You don't find things that are enduring.
Right.
And the way to deal with it is by living the good life, by doing what you're supposed to do, as opposed to thinking that the reason why you don't understand is just because you haven't read enough books, or the reason why you don't understand is because you haven't built enough things. No, the reason you don't understand is because you can't.
It's not understandable.
Correct. I think that's what he's doing.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, Ricky.
There is a saying, excuse me, there's a saying that goes, we should love children more than they deserve to be loved. I think the saying is that we should revere God more than we think he does, because he's not going to get us anything. We're not to expect that just by doing good, we'll be happy the rest of our lives. He's saying, just do it. Just revere God and just do what you have to do without any expectations.
Mm-hmm. So I think the expectations, I mean, you're right, he's lowering expectations certainly in terms of this world. Like, don't expect anything in this world. That's for sure. But by the way, just in terms of, I think it was Gita who said something about him writing a book in order to write the book. So one of the lines in Koheles that we have not yet dealt with, we've dealt with a lot of lines as we've just sort of jumped around, is where he says, you know, making a lot of books is also a waste of time. So Sfarim Harbein Kates. You can keep on writing forever.
When I had a bookstore, I used to say that to all the customers.
Yeah.
Too many books.
Too many
please.
Books.
I think it should be followed by, for some people, everything that we say, for some people, it's worthless. And for some people, it's not worth amassing goods. But you know what? It's nice if you can take holidays and things. For some people, it's nice.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of the philosophy should be added with some people.
I hear you. Okay, so shall we go on to Hevel? Okay, let's do that. I'm just going to make a new report.